The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome back. And we can start kind of a little more, a little bit louder. I think so, yeah. Let's see, is that still a little louder? Can you hear okay? You can't hear now because it's echoing for me here.
It sounds like it's only coming from the back.
Only in the back. I hear it from here. Here, do you hear it from here?
It's not coming out of there?
I think it is, yeah. Yeah. It's coming out of there, too. Yeah, it's really loud. That one's really loud? Why don't you turn that one down? Maybe that would help. Is it the knob over the shoe rack? So let's see, is that any better? Yeah, quieter, a little bit better. Yeah, it's better for me too. So people are still coming in. We can start a little bit informally. If you have any questions or comments or reports about your meditation or anything you'd like to bring up based on last week, and then in a few minutes we can start the new class for today. Yes, and if, that'd be great. If you could use the mic, that would be helpful. Right here.
So I had a very unexpected gift in the meditation about eating. Exercise, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was going to be really hard for me to put the spoon down. I picked something really simple, and I picked when no one was home. But I was just eating polenta, and so it's warm, steamy, hot, uh-huh. textured. There were a lot of things to notice about the shape of the bowl and my habits, and I noticed I was carving, stirring the polenta in this process, and I started to feel the shape of the spoon. And the heft of the weight of the spoon in my hand against the exact curve of this beautifully shaped bowl. They're both favorites of mine. I just didn't really ever put it together.
Yeah.
And then I kept stirring, and it made a bell sound.
Oh, with the polenta in it.
It was amazing. Mm. I just sat there. Because I had no idea I was so... I was so sensitive to or attuned to sound.
Maybe as opposed
to breathing, because uh-huh. I tend to focus on my heart rate, which doesn't seem to be regular,
uh-huh.
and I'm focused on my breathing.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little interruptive, and I found out the easy way, I guess.
Do you think the auditory world is richer for you than the somatic world?
Or maybe I just got to have this experience.
Very nice.
It sounds like
you got concentrated. You got not just mindful, but you were fully absorbed in that world, and you discovered how satisfying it was.
Yeah.
And it kind of became more vivid. And it's a very common for people who get concentrated or really absorbed, just really present for what they're doing, that the present moment experience becomes much more vivid and fascinating and beautiful. And it's a wonderful thing. And it's possible to have that same experience with the breathing, to get it really absorbed in just breathing, that also the whole breathing world starts getting very vivid, and some of the same delight that you had around the bowl and the polenta and the spoon can happen with the experience of breathing. And it's not necessarily only about the object of attention, how wonderful it is. There's something about the nature of absorbed attention which creates beauty or is beautiful. And if you follow the breathing and you get kind of pulled into the world of the heartbeat and it keeps you distracted or something, you might try, maybe the auditory world is more interesting for you. I think last week we did sound meditation, hearing meditation at the end. Did you try that as a formal meditation? You might try that and see if that's interesting for you. Thank you. Someone else? Hillary over here.
And if you could hold it, can you hear?
No, is it on?
I don't know that this is on. Yeah, you can.
Let's try
Does this work better?
Is it like a slider up properly?
Yeah. Mm.
My question is just logistical.
Yeah.
Is last week on podcast for those of us who missed it?
Yes.
It
is.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on the website?
Yes. Okay. If you go on the Audio Dharma website, there's a link to it. And if you go on the My Talks, then it'll come up easily and list the most recent ones.
Was there a handout last week?
Yes. Too? And if you go on the Audio Dharma menu page on the left, there's a Intro to Meditation link that goes to, I think, mostly the past classes. And there somewhere you'll find the handout, the PDF.
Thank you.
Is there anything else? Yes.
I'm just, does it sound like it's, yeah, it does. Okay, just hold it close to you.
So, off the cushion, I've been trying to focus on my breathing.
Yeah.
Or I've tried been mindful, and I've noticed that when I'm just trying to be mindful, I wander. Uh-huh. But when I use my breath as an anchor and try to be mindful, I have more, I can be mindful for longer.
Yeah.
Why in this practice is the breath the base of everything? Like, how did that come to be the organization or the foundation for everything else in the practice?
The breathing is, many religious traditions have meditation practices that focus on breathing. And often the word breath in different languages refers to something very profound. Life energy, life spirit. You know, the word spiritual inspiration has the word breath in both words, because like respire, the word spiritus also has connected the word to breathe. And why is that? Partly the breathing exists at the nexus, at the meeting point of many different aspects of our psychophysical being and the world around us. It's very responsive. And so our emotional life gets related to our breathing, our volitional life, our relationship to the world around us. The breathing is something you can both control and also happens automatically by itself, so you can relax into it. When you're sitting still, the breathing is the grossest movement in the body, so you're paying attention to that which is most biggest kind of movement, so it's maybe a little easier. The rhythm of it is comforting. It's easier to get concentrated for most people on something that's alternating and kind of cyclic than it is to focus on something that's stationary and unmoving. And kind of, because when you try to focus on one thing that's unmoving, it tends to create a strain. But if something is cyclic and comes and goes, it gives a chance the mind to kind of be massaged by it or come and go a little bit with the experience. The breathing is calming. It's not uncommon for people who, you know, are afraid or have panic attacks to breathe deeply and to relax and settle. So it can be pretty compelling. It's always there.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's it.
That's good to me.
You know, the attitudes we have about life are often embedded in how we breathe. And one of the interesting things that happens when people really get into the meditation in a deep way is sometimes with very strong mindfulness and very settled meditation, people start noticing subtle attitudes about life itself. They're general attitudes that are embedded in how they breathe. So, for example, some people discover that they get anxious at the end of the out-breath, because there's a letting go. And some people don't really feel so safe or secure in life, and to let go is to be kind of undefended. And so some people, as they let go, they kind of don't really want to breathe out all the way because of the... Some people, once they have breathed out all the way, they find there's a subtle resistance to breathing in, because they don't want the world to come back in. They want to be left alone. You know, they don't want input. There are other people who find that they breathe in happily, but then they don't want to let go. They don't want to breathe out at all, because now they have all the goods. And so there's kind of reluctance. So it might seem kind of silly, but it actually represents sometimes an underlying attitude about how we live our lives. Some people afraid of letting go or afraid of losing control. Some people don't want to be bothered by things, leave me alone. I don't want to give up what I have, all kinds of. So it's very interesting to discover these subtle psychological attitudes. And subtle doesn't mean that they're unimportant. Subtle means that they're sometimes the foundation that's kind of buried. So one more. Anything, anybody wants to bring anything up before we start? Some report, little report about how meditation is going for you, those of you who are starting through this class. I'd love to hear a little bit, so I have a sense of what's happening. Yes.
So I feel like I want to meditate like during the day or maybe, like I usually meditate in the morning, but sometimes like during the day I feel like I want to just like take a break and meditate even if I'm like busy or doing something. And also at night before going to sleep I feel like I want to go back to that place. And sometimes I just do it laying down in bed because I'm just tired and but I'm still like breathing and, mm-hmm. and doing that. I don't know if it's okay to do it in that position, laying down. Sometimes it feels more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that I've been noticing is just sort of like a change in the way that I'm looking at things or that I'm reacting to things and thinking like, oh, there is another way to react to
uh-huh.
things.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So the mindfulness, the meditation is teaching you, it's nice to go to a calm place or some kind of a place you can go to, and you're attracted to go there more often during the day, not just touch in once in the morning or something, but periodically, and that it changes how you're reacting to the world and responding to the world. And also, it's more, you feel better about how you respond? It feels more satisfying? Or
yeah, like calmer, more detached, not so reactive, not so.
Great.
It doesn't depend on what what is coming to me,
yeah.
but it's more like how I feel, like mm-hmm. which is calmer and not so.
Nice, great. So that's I'm happy to hear this. You're getting some of the fruits of the practice, and doing that, you're making it your own. You're kind of finding its value for yourself and doing it for reasons that you find attractive and meaningful. I like it. Thank you. Okay, so today's topic is mindfulness of emotions. And emotions are a very important part of human life. And there's many attitudes that people have about their emotions. There are trends, fashions that people have around emotions. Different decades, there are different attitudes or fashions around what emotions get emphasized, what emotions are valuable, how to relate to emotions. In a kind of a little bit of a stereotype, but you know, in the 1950s, we're a little bit more about you know holding it in and not being very expressive. 1960s and maybe 70s are more about expressing everything. And then there's a variety of different things and. Different fashions in the world of politics around emotions, times when fear and anger predominates. It has a 4-year cycle, I think, when these things are popular or something. And the cultural, familial attitudes they learn about emotions. Some people feel that quite free to express their emotions. Other people, it's a kind of a strange idea that you would express your emotions, let other people know, because it's just very private and personal, and it's not something you share with other people, and that's kind of how some people grew up and what they take to be appropriate. There are many different relationships. Some people have ideas that certain emotions are not allowable, and other emotions are the ones that are supposed to have. There's places sometimes when anger is never allowed. some families where worry is not just allowed but expected. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't really show your love unless you worry. And so it's the currency for showing that you care. And so people learn growing up worrying a lot. So there are a few things about to say about the emotions before we kind of go into the meditation part of it. One is that for the purposes of meditation and for mindfulness, that all emotions are allowed. There's no censoring of emotions. There's no judging that some emotions are bad, some emotions are, you know, good. For straight, simple mindfulness, it's one of the few places, maybe in people's lives, where you're allowed to have any emotion that comes up in the meditation. And part of the reason for that is that for the time of the meditation, you're kind of committed to sitting still. And so if you have murderous rage, you're not going to do anything. Your hands are going to stay in your lap, and you're not going to do anything. And if you have phenomenal degrees of lust, well, you're there alone. You know, you're not going to get in trouble, at least at that moment. And so whatever the emotion is, and it's allowable, it's okay. And so you don't want to get the idea in meditation circles that you're supposed to somehow censor your emotions or deny certain ones. It's really about making room for them. And some people find this is a tremendous gift that meditation offers, that it's a one place where these things can just flow freely as they are. At the same time, it doesn't mean that we are acting on them or reinforcing them or getting involved in the emotions. There's a balance between being involved and being repressive, being involved and pushing away. One way of understanding the midpoint between that is to allow. Simply to allow it to be there, and not to celebrate them or not to condemn them. Just to allow the simplicity of it. And that does a number of things. One thing it does is it allows the emotion to move through without any inhibition from us, any censoring or twisting by us, and without us fueling it or feeding it. And many emotions continue through time because of how we feed it or fuel it. So resentment is a good example of it. You might feel emotions of anger and resentment, but then it dissipates for a while. And then you're reminded about that no good schmuck. And then you start thinking about the story, and then you feel the resentment coming back. And then you start thinking about someone else who's done you wrong, and then someone else, and you... And then the stories you tell yourselves kind of adds fuel to the fire, and it keeps it going. But if we don't tell stories, then there's no fuel, and the resentment might kind of quiet down quite a bit. So by just allowing it to be without any fuel, without picking it up and getting involved, it can move through us and kind of do what it does. One of the interesting little twists of language is that the word emotion, it comes from Latin, and the word, the prefix e means out and in Latin, and motion means motion. So moving out. Emotions are things that want to move out unless they are held or bottled up. So resentment is often frozen anger. It's not moving through us. Charlie Brown talked about good grief. I suppose that bad grief would be grief that's now kind of frozen or bottled up. We're not allowing it its freedom to move through us. Certain sadnesses are frozen sadness. They kind of held tight, and we're not giving its freedom to kind of move through us, just be there. And it can be very healing for our emotional life to have freedom within us to just kind of unfold and move as it needs to. Some emotions need to... It's often a surprise in meditation that sometimes people get quiet and calm, and suddenly some unexpected emotion will arise. And some people think, oh, my meditation's not working. But actually it is working, because part of the function of meditation is to free up what's been bottled up or what's been repressed or something. And so sometimes emotional outpourings can come. And sometimes there can be tears and people cry. And sometimes there can be fear and anger and all kinds of emotions can come. And when they arise in meditation, it's considered a healthy and healing thing for it to happen. So you don't need to judge it and say, oh, this is wrong, this is bad. And then we learn about emotions. By opening and being present for it and allowing it that way, then they become a field of study, something we begin to understand better. What's going on when we have an emotion? What is our relationship to the emotion? Are we for it? Are we against it? Do we make judgments about ourselves for having it? I'm a good person or bad person because I have it. What do we add on top of the emotion that's extra? What's the secondary stuff that we add? And so there's a story from the time of the Buddha. The Buddha was sitting with a group of people, and he said to them, if a person is struck by an arrow, someone shoots an arrow at the person, and the person is struck, is that painful for the person? And his audience said, yeah, that's painful. And then he said, well, then if you take a second, the person takes a second arrow and strings it and fires it at the person, would that be even more painful to be struck by a second arrow? Oh, yeah, it's more painful. To be two arrows rather than one. And then he said basically something like this, that the first arrow is what life brings you, that comes with being alive in a person. The second arrow is the one that you shoot. And that's the one that we want to stop. So if I'm walking down the sidewalk here and I trip on the sidewalk in front of all of you, I'm supposed to be Mr. Mindfulness, right? So you know, here I wasn't mindful, and this is rather embarrassing, and then I feel angry at myself for being such a klutz, and then I think, well, here I am angry again, I should know better, especially in front of all these good people. I'm going to come to IMC to talk about how to be mindful of emotions, and I'm having, I'm enraged because of my inability to be mindful properly, and so it goes. I'm adding arrow after arrow. The first arrow was I tripped and maybe scraped my knee and it hurt. That's the first arrow. All those other judgments and evaluations and fears and concerns are the third and fourth and fifth arrow that I'm kind of piling on the top. So many times the suffering we experience, the distress, the challenges we have, are often related to the second, third, fourth arrows, not to the primary thing. So you can be sick. Everyone gets sick sooner or later. And the mindfulness might not help you at all. Meditation might not help you get better faster, but it might help you not to add second arrows to being sick. I found this with sleep. There was a period of time where I had trouble sleeping. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I couldn't sleep. And I would be distressed. And then I thought, why am I being distressed? What's this about? The default in mindfulness practice is to investigate. So I started investigating. What's going on here when I'm awake at night and I'm feeling distressed? And I saw that the distress had nothing to do with what was happening in the moment. I was actually very comfortable. I had been well fed the evening before. I had I was comfortable in my blankets. I was warm. I felt safe. In and of itself, it was a nice scene, just laying there in bed. It's actually kind of, pretty good. But it was the thoughts that I had about what this meant for tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'll be too tired. Tomorrow, I won't be able to perform and to speak and take care of what I have to take care of. Tomorrow, I'll look ragged and people will judge me and say, Gil, you look so, are you okay? And poor Gil, and, people... whatever. And tomorrow, and so my concerns about tomorrow, which was the second and third arrows, it was like I was my suffering had to do about something that didn't exist except in my imagination. And when I finally saw that distinction, then I could sit there, I could lay there in bed and just be content to lay there in the safety and the warmth of the bed, and not get involved in those imaginary ideas of what tomorrow might be like. It's helped. What's helped me around this is it turns out that in my lifetime, I have a very poor track record of predicting the future. And I had to predict the future maybe 10,000 times, 100,000 times. And most of those times it didn't work out. It didn't happen the way that I thought it would. So I'd prepare, I'd plan, I would worry, I'd have all this mental energy around what was going to happen tomorrow. And I'd show up and things were different. And all that time was wasted planning and worrying because it was different than I thought. So slowly over time I learned that my ability to predict the future was pretty poor. And then I learned maybe I don't have to do it so much. And so now I can just lay in bed, and if I'm not falling asleep, just be content and just appreciate the moment. And like you appreciated the bowl and the soup, I appreciate the blankets and the warmth and the quiet and the safety. And usually that is, just doing that helps me fall asleep. But I'm not adding anything. So the idea of the second arrow is not to add anything. Even if something's uncomfortable, just let it be uncomfortable. But don't add, you know, stress and challenges on top of that. So with emotions, this is particularly important. We can have challenging emotions, we can have beautiful emotions. And the art of meditation is not to add arrows to it, not to cling to it or add, you know, tie it up in chains, whatever we do. So we want to start looking at what is the relationship you have to an emotion. There's an emotion, and then there's your relationship to it. The commentary you have, the judgments you have, the expectations you have, the resistance you have, the fear you have of it, all these things. And what we're looking for in meditation is have simple emotions, to let emotions just be arise in their simplicity of how they actually are before we add all this other stuff on top. And so this quest for simple emotions, emotions which are not complicated by our reactivity to them and response to it. So we sit and we sit with emotions, we breathe with emotions, we allow them to be part of it, and they become part of the meditation practice that we focus on. Does that make sense? So with that as an introduction, I thought we would do meditation, and as part of this, I'll do some guided exploration or instructions around emotions. And then afterwards, I'll talk more about the basic instructions for meditating with emotions. So, sitting upright in a posture that feels both alert and relaxed, and gently closing your eyes, and then checking in with yourself and notice just straight off, how are you? How are you feeling right now? What's your emotional state? Your mood? Are you restless, more restless, or more calm? More contented or discontented? More on the happy side of things or the sad side? More on the encouraged or inspired side, or more on the discouraged side? Do you feel more safe? Or do you feel more fearful? Anxious? In whatever way you're feeling, whatever is the predominant way you're feeling right now, experiment to see if you can have it be here very simply, just by itself, without any judgment or resistance or holding on. And a good attitude to have is that whatever way you're feeling has permission to be here. For these few minutes. And you might be familiar with some of the usual ways in which you respond to how you feel. And see if there can be a different way this evening. A simple curiosity. A willingness to feel it. Perhaps are you more on the bored side or more the interested side of things? Are you more confused or perplexed or more clear and engaged? Whatever way is happening, it's okay. But in a sense, step back and just observe it. Don't be it. Don't be involved in it. Don't be centered in your feelings, but rather step away from them and observe them there. As if they have permission to be there. And is there some place in your body that seems most closely associated with how you're feeling? Often emotions will show themselves in tensions or warmth or pulsing or energy in different parts of the body. Perhaps fear sometimes is in the chest, anger in the belly. Worry in the face. And as you allow yourself to feel how you are, feel it in your body. Let the body receive it, hold it, feel it. Experimenting with being very simple. Simple feelings. Now, take a few, couple of deep breaths. Fill your chest up. Relax as you exhale. Breathe in and relax. And perhaps as you exhale, maybe you can just let your emotions recede away. And then let your breathing return to normal. And begin to tune in to the body breathing. And whatever way you're breathing, let it just be that way, without adding second arrows or commentary or judgments about it. Just breathe simply, as it be simply with it. Letting go of your thoughts so you can better feel and experience the body breathing. There's a rhythm in breathing in and breathing out. See if you can tune in to that rhythm. Maybe like the rising and falling of waves. You allow your attention to ride the coming and goings of breathing in and breathing out. Perhaps noticing how the stillness in the room just around you, the close-in stillness, can support you in feeling the movements of the body breathing. And as you exhale, to relax the mind, as you exhale, relaxing the heart, relaxing into here, and then now letting go of the focus on your breathing. And notice how you're feeling now. And whatever way you're feeling is just fine, even if it's not so clear what it is. And then see if you can have a very simple awareness of how you feel. Experiment with not being for or against it, but letting your feelings kind of just float there, just be simple in themselves. And your job is simply to notice that they're there. And perhaps step away from them so you're not entangled in them or preoccupied with them. You become a little bit more the observer of them, giving them permission to be there. No problem. Perhaps you can let go of some of your thoughts so that you can be just simpler with the emotions, the feelings you have, how you are. As if there's lots of room for you to feel what's there. And then to end this meditation, you can take long, slow breaths, deep breathing, feeling your body again, feeling your body sitting against the chair or the floor. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, if you go into a very small elevator that can hold maybe two people, but there's already three people in there, and they're really big and sloppy. They have ketchup on their shirts, and they smell, and bad breath. But you have to go up the elevator, so you squeeze in between them, and you kind of, you know, you're looking at their belly buttons, you know. And it just feels so claustrophobic, and you thought, wow, this is like so oppressive, and how could people be this way? And it can be hard. But then, a different day, you go into a huge cathedral. Big, big high ceiling, big distance. And there are also three people, maybe the same three people as in the elevator, same dirty shirts, same bad breath. But they're spread out all, you know, different kind of individually, far away. And you know, there's lots of space, lots of room. And then it's easy to love humanity. But when you're claustrophobic, it's hard. So when we live in a claustrophobic world, if we tend to react and respond, things are much more difficult. So if we're claustrophobic with our emotions, if we're riding the emotions close, if we are so preoccupied and concerned about our emotions, or we're letting them kind of just like fill ourselves and take us over somehow, and then it can be quite difficult. But it is possible to create lots of room in the field of awareness, lots of room in the body, lots of room for them. And so in the capacity to observe with the inner eye, kind of, it's possible to open up and not be riding whatever the emotion is so close. Open up. And so some people think of meditation as creating breathing room. Lots of room for what's there. And if there's lots of room, then even so-called difficult emotions can be much more managed, much easier. In fact, it's possible to have a deep appreciation and valuing of our emotions if we're not kind of caught in their grip, if we're not being pushed around by them. So this idea of creating room for them, it's a very different idea than how most people feel about their emotional lives, whether it's the positive emotions or the so-called negative ones. If they're negative ones, people want to get rid of them. And so they, you know, they're kind of pushing their way of doing something with it. If positive ones, they want to hold on to them or they want to get them. The approach of this mindfulness meditation is not to do anything with the emotions, but to do something about how we are present for them, how we observe them. It's not about doing away with them or changing or getting better emotions per se, but discovering a better way to be with them, to create room for them. And then we can begin noticing the wisdom of them or what's needed in them. We can understand something deeper, that the causes of them or the conditions that bring them about. We can begin understanding ourselves more deeply. If we get rid of emotions or we cling to emotions too much, then we can't really learn what's there. And I like to think that all emotions should be deeply respected, and all of them have information embedded in them that's useful for us to know if we get to know each other, know ourselves deep, more and more deeply. So what was that like for some of you to do that meditation? So please, if you can use the mic, that would be nice.
So there were two things that were interesting for me. One was that I felt there were a lot of conflicting emotions, like something's going on related to my work, and in one respect I feel that's bad, in another respect I'm glad I don't have to deal with some of that stuff anymore. So there were like a whole series of these
kaleidoscope of,
you know, different sides of the coin, uh-huh, which I wasn't sure how to deal with. The second thing which was interesting was that you kept saying focus on the emotion. And each time I identified an emotion, there was a whole series of, not narrative, but why am I feeling this? Well, it's because of this. Then the thought started to spiral back, spiral off into the explanation of the emotion itself.
And you lost
and then
touch with it.
Come back to your emotion.
Yeah.
Get the emotion, get the narrative out, and then kind of come back. So I felt it a little bit challenging to focus purely on an emotion without going into thoughts around what's driving that emotion.
Great. The commentary and all that. So it's great that you see that. So maybe this is just the beginning. Learning the terrain, what goes on. It's a great insight you have. And what you'll learn as you see this better and how this works in your mind, you'll be able to see it earlier and see that you don't have to go into the narration. You'll be able to let go of it or not get involved in it earlier and just be able to stay very simply and just stay present for the experience. But what you saw today is a great beginning. Up here in the front, Hillary.
Mine was a very different experience.
Can you turn the volume up a little bit, maybe? Go ahead.
I'm going through a very rough week and a lot of stress going on and a lot of anxiety in me right now. And so this emotional mindfulness was a little hard for me to do it, especially when I breathe in and breathe out. There was this air from my belly that was, every breathing was making it, like literally butterflies in my stomach kind of feeling, which was making it very difficult. And yes, but the guided meditation definitely helped me focus on my breathing and not to be judgmental about the feelings. So, but yes, it's a very challenging thing.
So I know we can. Many of us have challenging emotions in our lives, and that's part of being a human being.
Also, I had a lot of preoccupied thoughts, going through a lot of stress, and so I'm just trying to focus.
It's easy to understand that. What was useful about this meditation for you? What do you think you learned by doing this?
I'm trying to be very consistent about doing it, practicing it every day. But yes, I'm not doing it very regularly, to be frank. But I'm trying my best. And since also yesterday when I was home, I had a lot of mental stress. So I just thought, no, I pushed myself to do this meditation and just try to sit in the corner of the room and just try to remember your words and try to visualize your the moment of when I be here, the feeling that I feel so good. And definitely that moment of I didn't have meditation for half an hour, which I didn't realize, because every 5 minutes I was having a very positive feeling, yes, I should continue, I should do this. I was feeling happy about it. Yes, I did it, but irrespective of how the rest of the days went, rest of the time went, that half an hour was beautiful.
I'm so happy for you. And what about this meditation we did now? You described very well. I mean, it was... The fact you described it so well means you were mindful. That was good. You described your challenges with the emotion, the anxiety you had. But what was useful about doing the meditation this evening?
I was not being judged about the anxiety. I was like, let it go, let it come, let me feel it, instead of saying, hey, don't be there for me. And at some very light point of time, I felt good, but again, that kept on pushing me, and I was like, it's okay. Meantime, I was trying to hear all your comments trying to...
I think that if you began to learn this evening not to judge your feelings, your anxiety, just let it be, it's a revolution for you, the beginning of a revolution. It's a fantastic thing you're learning. And slowly, you'll learn to do it better and better if you keep practicing. But what you discovered here, what you just described now, is a door that you can step in and develop over time. It's really great.
But yes, I would definitely want to implement this every now and then that I feel discomfort and make it a practice. I'm definitely working on that.
Great. Thank you very
much.
Maybe one more? You know, hold it close to you.
So I guess so the things I noticed was, one, just like you know, feeling in my body more, and especially having more sensation in my heart area, and actually seeing that sensation reflecting things that were going on in my mind, and feeling like that was like an easy thing to watch. And I guess two other things were. One was seeing that, I guess they're connected, is seeing that I was kind of had a biased perception of what was going on in my mind, that I was like really drawn to certain things over others. And as a result, I thought it was kind of skewing my picture of what the overall mental activity was. And that bias was towards negative things.
Mm.
And it was kind of driven by this belief, I think, that you seek out the negative things so that you can solve it, so then everything will be good.
Uh-huh.
And that's an effective strategy. But it was just meaning that I was ignoring all the good stuff that was going on, like positive feelings. Uh-huh. It was like a whole, you know, like a song that's playing and you're right. Like focusing on the bass or something. And that the kind of mental actions that followed from perceiving that there was a problem and trying to fix it were just, you know, it's stirring up the glass.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. I'm delighted to hear all that. To have that kind of insight and understand, be able to sit and watch and see how your mind operates, the operating principles that you're working on, is really also kind of a movement towards freedom, a movement towards not believing that, not being caught in that anymore. So that's fantastic, just in the sitting like that. Thank you. How many of you found when, you know, when you first closed our eyes, I suggested that you just notice right away how you feel. When are you surprised by what you discovered? Yeah? Yes, you were surprised? Some saying no. Good. But many people can live a busy life, involved life, and thinking of important thoughts, whatever's going on, and they're not really in touch with themselves. And part of the advantage of meditation is to get quiet enough to discover what's really going on. And sometimes it can be a surprise what's there. How many of you, when you were present for some emotion or feeling or mood, and you kind of allowed it to be there, maybe you're able to observe it a little bit, that it dissipated? How many of you found that it got stronger? How many of you found that it stayed the same? Well, guess what? Those are the three options. And your job is just to know that. But not just to know it, but what I've learned in doing meditation, mindfulness meditation in relationship to emotions, is not just to know that those are the three options, but to trust it, that it's trustable. Really trust whichever way it goes. We tend to want certain things to go away, and we want the good ones to grow. But it's better not to have an idea of what's supposed to happen, but just to trust what is happening. So if difficult emotion gets stronger while you meditate, just trust that it's okay. Maybe it needs to do that for a while. If nice emotions dissipate, trust it. If nice emotions get stronger, trust it. Some people have actually more trouble with very positive emotions than they do with the negative ones. Some people kind of just prefer the negatives. They feel safer with the negative ones. They're familiar. They're used to them. But strong, pleasant emotions are confusing. It's like, or maybe they're not really allowed. There are some situations, some cultures and some religions where really strong, positive emotions are considered not quite appropriate. And so they're not really valued much, and people kind of try to feel bad about having them. So, whatever it is, just trust what arises and be with it. So the general idea in mindfulness meditation, as the way we teach it here, is that the center, the home base for the practice is the breathing. And the breathing is very helpful. And one of the reasons things is helpful about the breathing is that if you're staying with the breathing in a careful way, you're putting the energy of attention into being with the breath. That means the energy of attention is not going into your neurosis, those of you who have it, is not going into your thoughts, your reactions, your concerns, your preoccupations. And slowly over time, less and less energy will go into those concerns and they won't grab you as much. So it kind of frees you from yourself by just going, coming to the breath and being simply there. There's a lot of benefit from meditating on the breath. However, we don't only meditate on the breath when we do this mindfulness meditation. If something else becomes more compelling than the breathing, then we let go of the breath and calmly bring our attention to that other thing that's more compelling. So last week I talked about doing that with mindfulness of the body sensations. The same thing can happen with emotions. So if there's a very quiet emotion in the background, just leave it there and stay with the breath, no problem. And if it's a positive emotion, a negative emotion, it doesn't matter. If it's just quiet in the background and not compelling, you don't have to do much about it. Just stay with the breathing and let the emotion take care of itself. What's interesting is that there can be, for some people, there can be two mild emotions, one positive and one negative, at different times. And the negative one, the positive one, they're completely content to leave in the background. But the negative one, they bring into the foreground because, the negative ones are really important to deal with or something. But the idea, just try not to do anything extra, just let it be. But when an emotion becomes more compelling, so it's kind of strong and dominant experience, then we let go of the breathing and we do mindfulness of emotion, which means we just observe it. The principle of just allowing it to be there is very important, giving it permission to be there. Some people find it helpful, the idea of stepping back from it or getting a bird's eye view of it. It's kind of like, don't be kind of enmeshed in it. Give it lots of space or be kind of step back and just watch it from a distance so you're not entangled with it. Some people find very helpful. The first thing to do when there's a strong emotion is to recognize that it's there. And it might seem like the obvious thing, but the simple recognition is very powerful. To really recognize, I'm happy, or I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm loving, whatever it might be, just to really recognize that it's there. And some people find it very helpful in that recognition to name it. Don't name it Joe or Sally, name it. It's for what it is. So if it's happy, just say to yourself very quietly, softly in the mind, happy or happiness. If you're angry, anger. And whatever it might be, confusion. And the reason, we call it mental noting, this naming, is that there's something about naming what it actually is, which becomes a fuller acknowledgement and recognition, that's what it is. Because it can be very tricky, our relationship with emotions, and we can get pulled into it and entangled with it in ways we can hardly even recognize sometimes. But there's something about that clear stepping back and saying, this is anger, that creates a little bit of space or distance or freedom from it, that makes it easier to just let it be there, and you're not kind of consumed by it or identified with it or something. So the first thing is to recognize it. The second is to just very simply, matter-of-factly name it. The third thing to do is to, one of the basic approaches here is to get interested in it, as to investigate, to get curious, what is this experience? But not to be curious, not to investigate analytically, where did it come from, why am I doing this, why am I feeling this, what did my parents do when I was 2 years old? Which are fine analysis in some situations, but for meditation, you don't want to go into the past, you don't want to go into the causes of it. You want to just investigate, what is it right now, here and now? What's this experience now like? And one of the best ways to do this in meditation, in mindfulness, is to feel it in your body. Most emotions have some corollary, some expression in your body. And so, and that's partly how we know we have an emotion, because of how it energetically appears in the body. And if you can find out where it's centered in your body, that emotion, And some people will tell me, oh, it's everywhere or it's nowhere. And then I'll ask them, is it in your little toe? And they say, no. Is it in your ankle? No. And then usually when I get to the ankle, no, no, it's above the waist. Or is it above your neck or below your neck? Well, it's mostly below my neck, or it's mostly above my neck. And then is it more in the front of your body, in the back? It's more in the front. And we get it, and after a while, we find out that it actually is someplace. It's just not, they're not used to finding it, and so they don't even know where to look. But it turns out that if you kind of begin narrowing it down, and what happens if you can feel the emotion in the body? It's kind of like when you feel the emotion in the body is one of the things that gives the emotion lots of room. And so the emotion has space to do what it needs to do. Also, the body is not a story. And one of the things that keeps emotions going is our stories about it. You know, the story, who did what to who, and what we need to do in response, and who's wrong and who's right, and how great this is, or whatever. And we kind of have this narrative that goes on that adds fuel to it. But the body is not a story. So it helps us to drop out of the story mind into the direct experience with it. And we want to try to stay with the direct experience. So if you're able to feel in the body, stay in the body. Trust the body. Do mindfulness of the body with the emotion. And then... So recognize, and then allow. So we have to recognize it. We have to allow it to be there. Give it permission to be whatever it is. Investigate it. Name it. Are some of the different aspects of this. And the other thing that helps a lot, what the Buddhists love to say, kind of a Buddhist instructions around emotions, is don't take it personally. Don't identify with it. Don't define yourself by the emotion. Don't say, I am an angry person because there's anger. Don't use it as a way to judge yourself. I'm a bad person because I'm a good person. Don't take it personally. And it's a little bit hard to do with emotions, because if you're not your emotions, then who are you? Some people are quite wedded to their emotions. They think because they emote, they are. Emotions are a very important natural phenomena that exists within us, but we don't have to define ourselves by them. We don't have to take them personally. They can just live inside of us and move through us, and we are bigger than the emotions. We don't have to be defined by our emotions or limited by them. And if we're not defined by them or limited by them, and they move through us freer, then emotions actually enhance us and support us in our life. As soon as we resist them or bottle them up or don't let them move freely through us, then things get kind of complicated quickly for us. So I don't know, that might have seemed complicated, all those steps. It's in the handout that there. But the idea is to, if an emotion becomes compelling, let go of your breathing, recognize what's happening, allow it to be there, name it, investigate it, and if you want to do the advanced course, don't take it personally. So what does that sound? Do you have any questions about that, or comments about it, concerns?
I just wanted to thank you for the way that you led us into the experience of the emotions, because I had come in with a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
But when you worded it as, are you feeling balanced or angry or however, you had given both sides to it.
Yeah, where are you in the spectrum? Yeah.
Right, where you are in the spectrum. I thought that was very important for me to realize, because I may have been feeling anger or annoyance, but on the spectrum, I was really more settled and content. So it was actually interesting to think about it as a spectrum.
So you were prioritizing the anger or something, thinking that was the whole show, and then it opened you up to realize there was more going on.
Right, and so I actually was, and then there was choice. I chose, so then when you do it that way, okay, so what am I choosing? So I really appreciate that you put it that way. That was very helpful.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, Gail. Thanks for having us tonight. My question is, if we don't take it personally, a little closer, if we don't take it personally, how are we supposed to be connected to the world? And if we're not connected to the world, then how are we supposed to have any action on the world?
So if you know, I think this, if I hit it right, this bell makes a nice sound. So let's see. Is that kind of nice today? Not particularly. There's a sound. So you're not taking it personally. But you hear it.
If I choose to acknowledge it, yeah.
But if you choose to acknowledge, but you don't have to take it personally, right? So one of the phenomena around emotions is other people's emotions. It's one thing to be aware of your own emotions, but then there's these other people who have emotions. And one of the interesting things... some people can have be in a sour mood, and they can snap at you and be angry at you, and you can take it personally. So this is about me, and how could they do this to me, and all this, and then you find out that what a tremendous challenge they're having at home. Maybe their spouse is dying, and their children are, because of all the stress at home, are in juvenile detention. And they don't really have enough money anymore because of all the medical bills. And so they're like stretched really thin. And you hear how they're struggling and how they didn't sleep the night before. And then you say, oh, you know, I don't need to take it so personally they were angry with me. It just has nothing to do with me. It's not about me they're angry. And you can still be connected to them and feel for them, but you don't take it personally in that. So same thing in ourselves. We can go through a hard time and be tired and grumpy, and hormones are doing wacky things. And so we have certain emotions can arise and occur. And we say, you know, this is not, I don't have to take this too personally. This is the cold, this is my tiredness, this is just something else going on. And so I don't have to define myself to it by it, but I can be present for it. I could feel it. I could be connected to it, but I don't define myself by it. Does that make some sense?
So are you asking us to take it personally, but not personally on an emotional level? Like it still personally affects us, but it should personally affect us emotionally.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit semantics, right? So so maybe let's say try it differently. Don't define yourself by your emotions, but feel them intimately. Be fully present for them. Respect them and be there for them, but don't define yourself by them in any kind of way.
Just in my daily life, I don't know if it's the bombardment of the political stuff that's going on in this country right now, but it seems that if I were to not take it personally, it seems like I would be detaching, and so then it's not so much giving up or not caring, but in the example you gave, if I didn't take it personally, would then I reach out to try to help that person?
Yeah.
So it doesn't affect me if it's just if I'm just walking through the world and these things just happen. If it's just the sound ringing through the room, then would I act upon it? Would I do anything? Would I be connected to it?
Yeah, what you're saying is quite reasonable, but it's also a little bit different than what I'm saying here this evening, because I was talking about not what the world does to you. If someone does something bad to you, it's to you, right? It's really you. It's not like someone else, and you should maybe stop them from doing it. But this evening we're mostly talking about the arising of your own emotions, and you have to take responsibility for your own emotions, and you can't expect someone else to do it for you. And part of the taking responsibility is to be present and get to know them. But what I mean by not taking your emotions personally is not to define yourself by it. And one way people define themselves is to put a value on themselves because of the emotions they have. I'm a good person, I'm a bad person because I have particular emotions. I'm a desirable person, undesirable person. I'm a worthy person, unworthy person, because I have these emotions. Or they define themselves more directly. That I remember once when I was about 21, I had an ecstatic summer, and I decided that I would never be depressed ever again. I just was not that kind of person. I identified myself as someone. And so then I went to live in Berkeley in that fall. And I had trouble finding a place to live and find work. And I'd never been more depressed in my life. And so I had this identity about not being a depressed person. And then I had an identity, now I'm a depressed person. And I'll always be depressed. And I was identified, I was defining myself by how I was feeling. But I don't want to deny that I was happy before the summer and depressed in the fall. But as soon as I identified with it, that this is who I am, it kind of locks it in. It's a little bit harder. It's kind of glued in more. So not define yourself by your emotion. It makes more room, makes it easier to change, makes it easier to be responsive to what goes on. And so this, what I mean by not taking it personally means don't define yourself by it. Does that make some sense? Different level. Okay. Yeah, but I'm, yeah. So, but I think you changed the topic.
Yeah.
Okay, what, let's do another one.
Hi. Thanks again for tonight.
Uh-huh.
I have a question kind of about thinking about loving kindness.
Oh, great. That's on my mind, too.
Oh, yeah, and,
just now.
And with difficult emotions.
With difficult emotions.
Yeah. Because I do kind of find that I gravitate towards that.
Uh-huh.
When I start to feel a difficult emotion, even when I'm not judging it,
I
don't know, I just find that like I naturally start to gravitate towards looking for love in that, or looking for like sort of, not necessarily to push it away, but just kind of, I don't know if that's sort of the way I deal with
Nice. With that.
Uh-huh. And I have a little bit of background with like metta meditation and whatnot. So I don't know, but I was just wondering if you could talk about that.
Okay. Okay, so what she's referring to is in our particular Buddhist tradition, there's two primary meditation practices that we do. One is this mindfulness meditation. Another is a meditation that's called meditation on loving kindness or on goodwill. Metta is the Buddhist word for it. And here, rather than just mindfulness, we just want to let things be as they are and know them for what they are. In loving kindness meditation, we're evoking kindness or friendliness, love, and directing it to ourselves and to other people. And so it's not just letting things be, but actually changing, you know, what we're doing. And some people find that with certain difficult emotions, it's very helpful to bring loving kindness to oneself. So if there's a lot of anger, a lot of fear, a lot of shame, that what's needed is a lot of self-compassion, a lot of love. And so sometimes it's just too much to just bring simple awareness, because as soon as they bring simple awareness, there's so much self-consciousness, there's so much automatic pilot of reactivity that it just kind of starts the reactions, the commentary, the judgments, the kind of spiral out. And so rather than bringing just simple awareness to the experience, it's better to bring love to it, or friendliness or kindness to it. And so, yes, it's a very useful thing to do, and it's part of the toolbox of what we do here. This is a mindfulness class here, but 4 or 5 minutes ago, I was thinking, I wonder if I should say something about loving kindness this evening. And so it was very nice that you brought it up.
Because I guess I kind of became confused even by your instruction at one point when I felt a difficult emotion, and it was actually towards the fact that people were moving in the room and I was getting annoyed because I was like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. Ah, that's so annoying. And then when you said let it, you know, just kind of let yourself feel that emotion, I did find myself getting more and more annoyed, even though I didn't necessarily find that I was going into a narrative.
Yeah. So, but be careful about using. One of the dangers of using something like loving kindness meditation as an antidote is it reinforces the idea we're always supposed to make ourselves feel better.
That's what.
And for you, remember I said earlier, even if it gets stronger, trust it. And here, in our meditation, mindfulness meditation, there are no distractions. So if there's noise in the room, it's a classic experience. Almost everyone who meditates in a group will go through this sooner or later, where someone is making noise. And so like I had this when I sat a 3-month retreat, so a long retreat, and the person who was sitting next to me, it was a very quiet meditation hall, and very still, and people were very kind of experienced practitioners, and so I was sitting there, and I'd always come to the meditation early, and I was diligent, and I would meditate. And the guy sitting next to me, he always came late. And there was a wooden floor going into the meditation hall. And he would his way of entering a silent meditation hall was the lumberjack approach. and bom, bom, you hear him coming, you know, and bom, bom, bom. And then he would sit down next to me, plump. But I don't know what he was doing, but he was always out of breath. And then, this is real, for real. And then he would sit for a while and his breath would calm down. And then he would rip open his Velcro jacket. So I got lots of practice of sitting with annoyance and things like that. And again, the basic approach is always get interested, bring your attention to look at it, allow it to be there. Don't judge it. Don't take it personally. Even if it gets stronger, the idea is to learn to be with it and not have to change everything. You have a lot more freedom in your life if you learn how to be with what is rather than changing what is. So I would practice with it. It took a while, and eventually I was no longer bothered by it. Eventually, actually, I found it kind of supported me because it helped me stay in the present. And at some point, it was just sound, like a sound of rustling leaves or sound of the wind or something. It was just, and I learned that the real problem was not the sound, but what happened to the sound as it traveled through me. My judgments, my self-righteousness, my attachment to my meditation. I'm about to get enlightened for, you know. I'm doing important work here, and you are messing me up, you know. I'm trying to be free in all circumstances, and you're messing me up. And so I learned to identify. So the sound is one thing. It travels through air and doesn't hit anything. And I learned to identify what it hit. And when I identified what it hit inside of me, that could fall away, and then the sound just traveled right through. So I would encourage you, that what we try to do in our scene, people like you, is to encourage you that don't go to loving kindness. Let yourself be thoroughly annoyed. It's probably good for you. And learn how to kind of just be present for it as simply as you can and see if you can learn from that. And for you, I hope that you have lots of opportunities to have noisy meditators around you. Yeah, you're welcome. please, loving kindness is great, and it's a wonderful thing. And you might have, it might be really great. Some people's primary meditation practice is loving kindness meditation. So in the 5 minutes we have left, maybe I can guide you in a short loving kindness meditation. And some people will do this loving kindness meditation as a preliminary to doing mindfulness meditation. They might do 2 or 3 minutes of this before at the beginning of their meditation, and it kind of creates a little more open, friendly mood, atmosphere for whatever they're going to is going to happen. So, taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And settle into your body. And letting your breath return to normal. But as you exhale, let the weight of your body let it kind of give in to the pull of gravity. So everything in you kind of settles straight down onto your seat. And somehow the weight of your body settles down to the lower part of your torso. So you feel some stability there. And then you might bring your, if you're comfortable with this, bring your attention to the area around your heart. And if there's any softness in that area or tenderness there, you might breathe through it. Feel the tenderness of softness. And then see if you can bring up thoughts, have thoughts, where you think about yourself in friendly ways. A kind regard for yourself. It can be a simple appreciation of yourself. A willingness to be your own friend, and so to be friendly towards yourself as you are. And see if you can find within yourself some feeling or attitude of wanting to care for yourself, of caring for yourself, that you value yourself, that you would like yourself to be well and happy, successful, the simple caring and goodwill. The generosity of care and goodwill. And breathing gently, feeling yourself inside. Seeing if you could, whatever goodwill or friendliness you can find for yourself, however small, from that place of kindness, very gently in your mind, silently, repeat the following sentences that I'll say out loud. Repeat it silently in your mind. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be at ease. And we'll do it again. And this time, as you say to yourself the last word of the sentence, let the resonance of that word, the meaning of it, the care that goes with that word, let it kind of travel through your body like a ripple through you. Receive it. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be at ease. And as we say it one more time, allow yourself to be the receiver of this goodwill, receiver of what these words actually mean. Take them into your heart. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be at ease. And then finally, one more last time, and this time as we say the phrases, let yourself be the one who is offering the kindness, the one who has the ability to be friendly, to offer something to yourself. Be the one who is being friendly. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be at ease. And then for a minute or so, switch over now to do a simple mindfulness of breathing, of what is, and see if there's any way in which any effect that that loving kindness had in your ability to be present mindfully for what is. And then to end this sitting, taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. And getting ready to open your eyes. But see if you can do so while you still stay attentive to having a friendly attitude toward yourself, a caring attitude. So there is this handout which gives some of the instructions for the emotions as well. And if you haven't picked it up yet, there's also, I have this book of essays on mindfulness that's on the counter as you leave, and there's a chapter in there on emotions and different aspects of mindfulness. You're welcome to take it. And there are more in the cabinets if you run out. Next week, we'll do mindfulness of thinking. I know some of you have been a little bit, ahead of the game. You couldn't wait to think. But next week, we'll talk about how to include and be present in a useful way around thinking, a very important area. And I hope that you enjoy your emotions this week.